Green investments to federal buildings are showing double-digit energy savings, according to the General Services Administration. They're looking at the effects of some energy upgrades. Ruth Cox is a senior sustainability official, and Walter Tersch is a program analyst at the General Services Administration. They are tracking the success of the green updates. And Ruth and Walter, I appreciate both of you being on the program today. Walter, I want to start with you. This came about because of these harsh winter analysis that you are doing. Tell me what a harsh winter analysis is and what you're looking at when you do one. Thanks for being on today.
Thanks for having us. Well, we started by looking at historical weather data over about the past 30 years of the nation as a whole. So we identified seven states plus D.C. that were hardest hit by last winter's polar vortex, Snowmageddon, whatever you want to call it. So we looked at how the federal buildings, the GSA, the Recovery Act, sustainable investments, and fared during these harsh winters. So basically, did the green building investments help weather the storm? So we found that even during just these cold, harsh winter months, and even just for the 59 buildings that we analyzed in these predominantly East Coast states, just these buildings saved enough energy to power over 600 American homes for a full year. So these are sustainability updates that will bring value to the American taxpayer for years to come and really will help prepare federal government buildings for whatever weather the future might bring.
Ruth, how did you determine which of the buildings were going to go into this pool of 59, or how did you determine that it was going to be 59? What was the process by which you set up the buildings that you were going to analyze?
Well, thanks, Francis. We appreciate you having us on today to talk about this important effort. At GSA, we have a very robust methodology for evaluating investment opportunities. And typically, these kinds of decisions are driven by building requirements and customer requirements. And on the building side of things, we're looking at our asset business plans, which are a repository of building engineering reports and physical condition surveys. And these reports help us determine the asset condition. And if there are issues with obsolescence or product lifecycle issues that dictate replacement of equipment, we, you know, take that into consideration. We also work closely with the regions and the building managers to identify performance or compliance issues. For example, is the building financially performing well? Is energy performing well? Are there life safety issues like seismic issues that need to be addressed or building codes that aren't being met? And we put on the customer requirement side, you know, many of our customers have their own plans for how their agencies are going to evolve. So, for example, the judiciary has five-year plans, and we have to take those into consideration. Some agencies like DEA or FBI have certain legislative mandates that they need to meet in terms of what their mission is that dictate needs from their perspective. And then there are real-world events that we have to look at, like the Oklahoma bombing and 9/11 had a big impact on things that had to change in buildings for security purposes. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking at, and then we put that through an analysis tool, a decision lens, and that's what helps us rank and prioritize.
So, Ruth, you go through those and prioritize is where I wanted to go next. You go through those, and how do you decide then that this one is going to be building number one that we want to look into and then also measure, and this one's going to be number 59 or however that shakes out?
Well, after assessing, you know, the building and customer requirements and performance characteristics, we have some other selection criteria that get put into the mix. For example, there's management input. In this case, I could give you an example. We're working very closely with many of our agencies right now on workplace transformation initiatives and lease consolidation initiatives. When you move a federal tenant from a leased space into a federally owned space, there's savings to be had. And so those are really important management initiatives inside GSA right now. So we have to take those into consideration. There are administration goals, like meeting our energy and water reduction requirements or clean power generation requirements. There are funding availability issues. We have several different budget allocations, one for new construction, one for repair and alteration. So we have to look at funding availability. And then we do look at the financial return on investment, and we do that in the context of life cycle costs. And we have to consider risk mitigation. So risk mitigation, you know, means we need to invest in this building now because failure would cause huge back-end commitments of funds if we don't correct the problem that's before us right now. So we look at all these elements that are used to measure a project's merit, and which allow for some kind of quantitative ranking, and that's how we go through the process of ranking and choosing the buildings that we do for investment.
Ruth Cox and Walter Tersch of the General Services Administration reviewing their harsh winter analysis on 59 federal buildings. Walter, how do you factor in the possibility that not every winter will be harsh? I think back to last year, of course, we had some pretty severe weather events. I believe it was two winters ago where we had like one snowstorm the whole winter. Is that a factor in how you choose where what you're going to analyze? Or do you tend to only go to maybe very northern locations? Or is there a way that you figure in the possibility that you might not get much of a way to measure because winter might not be too bad?
Yeah, great question, Francis. Definitely here on the East Coast, this summer was, for example, unusually mild after the, you know, unusually cold winter. But the logic here that we factor in is that by preparing buildings for the worst, they tend to operate better, you know, even if there is mild weather. So as a whole, our nationwide buildings where we've already completed Recovery Act investments are already saving more than $11 million a year in operating costs. And we're completing more of these buildings each year. So when all of GSA's hundreds of Recovery Act projects in about 447 federal buildings are complete, we expect savings of over $60 million per year. So these investments are really reaping a lot of savings. And one thing I'd just like to mention is that they are benefiting a variety of projects and buildings in our inventory. For example, GSA has a portfolio of 8,600 federal buildings. One of the case study buildings was the Robert Young Federal Building in St. Louis, Missouri. So this is a former warehouse from the Great Depression, but we're seeing 20% energy savings in the last year of complete data for over $250,000 of annual savings. So it did much better over the course of a full year than it did during the unusually cold winter.
I see in the analysis that you have here that you installed advanced metering systems in this building to track energy consumption. It says repaired building facade and windows, upgraded HVAC systems and controls, retrofitted the building with LED lighting. Are there parts of a refurb or a rehab of a building, Walter, that you do that may or may not reflect somehow in the energy savings overall? Or is there now some kind of energy savings that you can wring out of pretty much any kind of work that you do on a building?
What we try and do is package together different types of work. A lot of the Recovery Act investments addressed deferred maintenance needs. You know, sometimes you might need to replace the carpeting or replace the windows. That might have a lower return on investment than installing a new heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system that could save much more substantial amount of energy. So I just want to emphasize that the ARRA investments did not focus exclusively on energy savings. So although we are incorporating high-performance green building aspects in the scopes of these projects wherever feasible, there was broader investments and a broader focus than just energy savings.
So, Walter, you mentioned something that I want to expand on in the time that we have left, and either you or Ruth can answer this one. Where do you go next? Now that you have this information collected on this group of 59 buildings, how do you scale this across the portfolio, or at least a portion of the portfolio?
Well, I can answer that. You know, we have very ambitious plans to leverage the Energy Savings Performance Contracts Program that the President put in place. And we identified about $160 or $170 million worth of energy savings performance contracts last year that we've now started implementing, and another $140 million or so for this year. So we've learned a great deal from the activities that we undertook as part of the ARRA program. And now we are scaling and looking at other buildings in the portfolio and how we can start to reap some of the same rewards that we have through the ARRA program.
Are there other measures that you maybe discovered as you went along through this analysis that you said from now on we should include this and or make sure that we check that? Or are you going to be using the same set of information measures that you did for this analysis for what you do moving forward?
Well, we'll definitely leverage what we've learned from this. But we have something called the Green Proving Ground, which is a program that enables us to bring other technologies, new technologies, into our portfolio and test them in real-world conditions. And so we're going to feed the learning from the Green Proving Ground into our plans for our building upgrades going forward. So we're constantly evolving as we learn what we do to our buildings to get the best performance out of them.